Masechta Tainis, Daf Lamed Amar Aleph, Taisus Diri Maschil, V'Tarvayu L'Kula. To review the relevant background in the Gemara presents three shitos as to when the various restrictions surrounding the fast day of Tisha B'Av, namely what the Mishnah speaks about in terms of not laundering and not taking haircuts, by extension, the various other restrictions that are mentioned by the Rishonim and expanded upon by the Achronim, so it applies from Rosh Chodesh until and including the fast day of Tisha B'Av itself. And right away, the day after, the restrictions are lifted. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the restrictions are in place for the entire month. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the restrictions are in place during the Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av, which is also the language of the Mishnah. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel makes it explicit that it's the week of Tisha B'Av, including the days after Tisha B'Av. So if, for example, Tisha B'Av fell out on a Tuesday, so the restrictions will apply from Sunday through Friday, even though Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are after Tisha B'Av. So the Gemara quotes the position of Rava that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel and the halacha is like Rav Meir. So that seeming contradiction is explicated by the Gemara, v'tarvayo l'kula, which is the Dibur Maskil of Tosfos. That both of those are meant to indicate the leniencies of each one. So we combine the leniencies of each one. So Tosfos elucidate as to what exactly that means, tarvayo l'kula. The Tosfos has two parts. The first part deals with just explaining the Gemara of exactly what the words tarvayo l'kula mean. Then it proceeds to discuss two additional aspects of the prohibition against laundering, halacha l'maaseh. So Tosfos begin with the first part explaining tarvayo l'kula. Kalomar, meaning tarvayu, what are the two shitos that we are following their lenient views, l'kula? So number one, kidder of Meir, like the shita of Meir, the Omar, Meirash Chodesh Varatainis, who has the various prohibitions applying from Rosh Chodesh until the fast day. Uchir Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Omar Eino Oser Ela Oser Shabbos Bulvad. And like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who holds that the restrictions do not begin from Rosh Chodesh, but rather only that week is Oser. And then continuing, Halacha Kitarvayu Lakula. The halacha is like both of them Lakula. The first part of Tosfos is focusing on who these Tarvayu are and what their Shitos are, and now explaining how we follow the leniencies of each one. Kilomar, meaning, the Eino Oser Ela Oser Shabbos Bulvad. That only that week is prohibited. Kir Rav Shimon Gamliel, like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Meaning, unlike Rav Meir, who starts the restrictions from Rosh Chodesh, Rav Shimon Gamliel starts the restrictions from the first day of the week of the week of Tisha B'Av. As well as Vidavka, and specifically, Aratainis. It's only prohibited until Tisha B'Av itself, like the view of Rav Meir. Aval Acharatainis Mutter, but after the fast day, it is permissible, the halacha ki Rav Meir, because the halacha in that regard follows Rav Meir, the Omar who said, the Eino Oser El Adatainis, that it's only prohibited until the fast day. Unlike Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who maintains that the entire week of Tisha B'Av, the restrictions are in effect, both the days before and the days after. But Rav Meir holds that it goes from Rosh Chodesh until the fast day, but after the fast day, the restrictions no longer apply. So in that regard, we follow Rav Meir Lakula that the restrictions don't apply after Tisha B'Av. But on the other hand, we don't follow the stringency of Rav Meir that it starts from Rosh Chodesh, and that we follow the leniency of Rav Shimon Gamliel that it only starts in the week of Tisha B'Av. So that is how Tosfos present how Tarvayu Lakula plays itself out. It's somewhat Sarachian on this Tosfos because that presentation seems to explicitly appear in the Gemara. Right after the words of Tavayar Lakula, four lines down, so the Gemara says Utsricha, and you need both of them to be presented by Rava, that the halacha is like both of them, and the lenient side, Lakula. The Iyashmin al Alachir of Meir, Havamin Afil Marash Chodesh, Kamash Malan Alachir of Shimon Leil. The Iyashmin al Alachir of Shimon Leil, Havamin Afil Acharav, Kamash Malan Alachir of Meir. Those words that we just read are exactly what Tosfos present. Not in exactly the same words, but almost, but certainly the same concept. So why was it necessary for Tosfos to elaborate when the Gemara itself elaborated? So it appears, to my humble opinion, that Tosfos didn't have that girsa. And in Tosfos' Gemara, the Gemara ended at Tavar Lakula without a subsequent explanation. So therefore, Tosfos took it upon themselves to explain what Tavar Lakula means. Rashi, by contrast, in Dibur Maskil Tavar Lakula says, Kedem Mefarash V'Azu, as the Gemara continues to explain. Again, Rashi briefly summarized the Gemara, but certainly not as elaborately as Tosfos, because the Gemara basically presented it. Tosis, who very elaborately present the explanation, without alluding to the fact that the Gemara itself spoke about it, seemed to have not had that girsa. I looked in the Duke Sofim, which is a collection of alternate girsos. I did not find such a girsa, but perhaps Tosis didn't have it in order to explain why he was seemingly unnecessarily explanatory here when the Gemara itself says it. The second part of Tosis, again, explaining halacha lemaisa, how to apply the restrictions of laundering, so writes as follows. V'avagav t'sholchum ishmei d'Rabbi Yochanan d'chlei pishtan mutar l'chabes b'moed. Mikom mikom hechmer lano moreinu Rashi loseis adinin shalano v'koveis osa shavua shahoya ba tishabav kodem hatayimus. To translate phrase by phrase, v'avagav t'sholchum ishmei d'Rabbi Yochanan, even though they sent in the name of Rabbi Yochanan d'chlei pishtan, that linen garments mutar l'chabes b'moed, that one is allowed to launder them on the holiday. So on the side of the Ozvar Gemaras, they point out that in context, this seems to be the incorrect girsa. It is true that on Chol HaMoed there is a laundry restriction, and that's what would be meant by the word moed, but linen garments may be laundered on Chol HaMoed. That's a Gemara moed cotton. But why would the Balei Tosfos be speaking about Chol HaMoed here? So presumably he's referring to the Gemara Chavtes HaMebeis, that also has a statement in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that even though one is not allowed to launder during the surrounding period of Tisha B'Av, again, Lahalacha, the week of, up until the fast day, but not afterward, but one is allowed to launder linen garments. So according to that, the girsa should be, V'avagav t'sholchum ishmei d'Rabbi Yochanan d'chlei pishtan mutar l'chabes b'Tisha B'Av, or b'Shavua shachal bo Tisha B'Av, in the surrounding period around Tisha B'Av. So even though that one is allowed to launder linen garments according to the din of the Gemara, Mikomakom, nevertheless, Hechmer Lano Morena Rashi, that our teacher Rashi was Machmir, Lase Sadin and Shalano, Lakobes, Osa Shavua, Shahoya Batishabov, Kodamatinus. That Rashi was Machmir, that we should not give our sheets, which apparently were made out of linen, to the launderer that week that Tishabov fell out during that week, Kodamatinus before the fast day. Again, keeping in mind that we paskin like the conglomeration of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Meir's position, that the restrictions begin during the week of Tisha B'Av and they lapse right after Tisha B'Av. So only during the period before the fast day would this prohibition be in effect. In other words, the Gemara allows laundering linen garments, but Rashi was machmir. Why was Rashi machmir? So one could suggest two perushim. One is, and that you have in various other areas of the leniencies the Gemara has concerning the period surrounding Tisha B'Av, where oftentimes Ashkenazic Jewry, based on the leadership of their poskim, were more machmir than the din of the Gemara. For example, the Gemara does not know of a restriction against bathing during the week of Tisha B'Av, yet that is standard Ashkenazic practice. The Gemara allows laundering for Shabbos, but yet, outside of extreme circumstances where there's no clothes for Shabbos, the standard psak is we don't allow laundering for Shabbos, even though we extend the period of the mourning from the week of Tisha B'Av to the famous 9 days from Rosh Chodesh and onwards. So even if there's a Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, after Rosh Chodesh, so generally we would not allow laundering. So here too, Rashi was machmir not to launder linen garments, even though the Gemara allows it. That, on a simple level, would be the Pshat and Rashi, that it's our custom is to be more machmir than the din of the Gemara in this regard. One give a fancier Pshat based on a detailed analysis of the Ran
in the name of a Rishon in his day by the name of Rabbi Yehuda b'Rav Reuven
as to why exactly it's permissible to launder linen. The Gemara didn't actually say you're allowed to launder linen,
which would have been indicated by the verb
koves. It actually said you're allowed to be megahetz linen. So there's a machlokas of Rishonim as to what megahetz means. Is that a higher form of laundering or is that ironing? And if it means ironing, so perhaps the reason that you are allowed to iron linen garments is because, at least if they're used linen garments, the ironing doesn't really create such a freshness to the garment because it doesn't really, I guess, hold the press of the iron so well, being, I guess, rather thin. So according to that approach, Iran points this out, that actual laundering of linen garments would be prohibited. So it's possible that Rashi was going with that approach. Somewhat of a mystery. Nonetheless, in Shulchan Aruch, that is indeed the way we paskin, even though the Gemara allows somehow processing, whether it's laundering or ironing linen garments, but customarily that is not done during the restrictive period surrounding Tisha B'Av.
The Shulchan Aruch actually quotes both possibilities, not necessarily as possibilities in Rashi, but in general, that either we prohibit laundering linen as a minhag, and perhaps even as a din, based on the approach quoted by the Ran.
The next part of Tosfos mentions a leniency in terms of laundering, and that is as follows. Aval hecha dechal Tisha B'Av behei b'Shabbos, but where Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, that always is calendarically when Pesach falls on a Thursday as well. Mutar l'chaveis v'lesaper mechatzos ve'elech. One is allowed to launder and also take a haircut from noon and onward, mipnei kvod Shabbos, because of the honor of Shabbos. De'ein l'hamten ad erev Shabbos, since it would not be appropriate to wait until Friday, the day after Tisha B'Av, mipnei torach Shabbos, because of the efforts being put in before Shabbos, to prepare the food and the house, etc., and if one would leave laundering and haircutting till then, one might not have enough time. This Tosfos presents somewhat of a mystery to both the Beis Yosef and later Poskim as to exactly what he means. Again, the situation that Tosfos are dealing with is where Tisha B'Av fell out on Thursday. So, following the Gemara, the Shavua Shechal Bo would be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's the week of Tisha B'Av, and the restrictions would be lifted the day after Tisha B'Av, which would be Friday. So when Tosfos says that when Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, you're allowed to launder and take a haircut from Chatzos and onward because of Kavod Shabbos, and one should not wait till Friday because Friday's a busy day, so what day is he talking about? So the simplest reading of Tosfos would be that he's talking about on Tisha B'Av itself, that the day before Friday, namely Thursday, so even though it's Tisha B'Av, and certainly the restrictions apply even more so then, plus a lot of other morning restrictions, but nonetheless, from Chatzos and onward, one is allowed to take a haircut and do laundry. Reading it that way would help explain why he's only permitting it from Chatzos, because, as we know from other areas, at least in Minhagim, after Chatzos, we consider the restrictions of Tisha B'Av to be somewhat relaxed, at least in terms of those things that are only done by custom, such as sitting on the floor, so we no longer sit on the floor after Chatzos. But still, that reading, even if Tosfos is limiting the permit to after Chatzos, seems to be exactly against the Gemara on Chavtes Mebeis. Because on Chavtes Mebeis, there was a rather lengthy brisa, speaking about the various restrictions before and how they're released after Tisha B'Av. Again, a proof to the Psak of the Gemara in conclusion that the restrictions only apply beforehand. So the Gemara gives all these scenarios of when Tisha B'Av falls out. It falls out on Sunday, so there are no restrictions. It falls out on Monday, so only Sunday is restricted, but not the days afterward, and so on and so forth. And then the Gemara continues to discuss a situation where Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday. And there the Gemara tells us that before Thursday, you're not allowed to do laundering and take haircuts. And after, meaning on Friday, you're allowed to. And then the brisa continues that if Tisha B'Av falls out on Friday, so then, as the Mishnah states, that even though the restrictions apply during the week of Tisha B'Av, but you're allowed to do laundry on the Thursday of the week of Tisha B'Av, mipnei kvod HaShabbos. The brisa continues to state that if you didn't get a chance to do laundry on the Thursday before the Friday of Tisha B'Av, again, we don't have Tisha B'Av ever falling out on Friday, but during the times that they were Mekadesh shall be Edim, so theoretically Tisha B'Av could fall out on Friday. So again, if Tisha B'Av fell out on Friday, so you're allowed to do laundry on the Thursday beforehand because of Kavod Shabbos, but if you didn't, the brisa says that you're allowed to do laundry on Erev Shabbos, which is Tisha B'Av min ha-mincha l'mayla, which is basically from Chatzos and onward if we take Mincha to mean Mincha Gedola, 1/2 hour later. So on that part of the brisa, the Gemara comments, Layit ala Abaye, that Abaye cursed at that. Some say it was Rav Acha bar Yaakov, that cannot be, that part of the brisa was clearly corrupted. That to allow laundering actually on the Yom HaEvel HaGadol of Tisha B'Av itself is clearly not correct, even though the brisa only permitted it after Chatzos. So how then, asks the Beis Yosef, asking on Tosfos, do Tosfos say that in a case, in our calendar, Tisha B'Av never falls out on Friday, how could he say that if Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, would the brisa never even entertain the possibility of doing laundry on Tisha B'Av itself, not before Tisha B'Av, because that's Shavua Shechal Bo, and only allowed laundering on Friday?
But the Braisa didn't say that because you might run out of time on Friday that you're allowed to do laundry on Tisha B'Av after Chatzos. And even if you would entertain such a possibility, as the Braisa says, when Tisha B'Av falls out on Friday and you didn't get a chance to do laundry on Thursday, that you could do it on Tisha B'Av. Min ha-mincha l'mayla. So, but Abaya struck out that line, that that doesn't make any sense. So how could Tosis calmly state that if Tisha B'Av falls out on Friday because Friday's a busy day, that you could do laundry and take a haircut on Tisha B'Av after Chatzos? So he says clearly this was a mistake in Tosfos and it cannot be true. The Gra takes out these lines in light of that critique of the Beis Yosef that it cannot be. The Bach attempts to defend the Tosfos that he misunderstood the Tosfos. That when Tosfos say that you shouldn't wait till Friday to do the laundry and take a haircut because Friday is very busy, he doesn't mean to permit those activities on Tisha B'Av itself after Chatzos. He means to permit it on Wednesday, Erev Tisha B'Av after Chatzos. Somewhat of a tzarachian, so why then is it only permitted after Chatzos? Adarabba, the closer you get to Tisha B'Av, the more sense of mourning there is. That's when the Siddur Mafsekes takes place. But nonetheless, the Bach says that that is the only viable way to read the Tosis, that you could actually do the laundry on Wednesday, even though it's Shavuot Shechalbo. That just like the Gemara allowed you to do laundry on Thursday, even though Tisha B'Av was yet to come and it fell out on Friday, so too the Gemara would allow you to do laundry on Wednesday when Tisha B'Av falls out on Thursday, even in our calendars. We don't have Tisha B'Av falling out on Friday, because it would be difficult to do it on Friday, and clearly we're not going to allow it on Tisha B'Av itself. Again, this reading is somewhat difficult because the Braisa earlier that we quoted had a case of Tisha B'Av falling on Thursday, seemed to only permit laundry on Friday, and actually told you to do it then. It didn't entertain the possibility of doing it on Wednesday because Friday is too busy. So even that reading is somewhat difficult. The Achronim debate as to whether or not we should accept that reading of the Bach of Tosus and whether to actually permit it. The Magen Avraham, as one example of a prominent Achron, dismisses the view of the Bach, which has stated he based on his interpretation of Tosfos, and asks various kashas on it, and halacha l'maisa, we don't really accept this Tosfos, even if that's what Tosfos meant. Tosfos Dibur Maschil, Erev Tisha B'Av, L'Yechal Adam, Peis Tavshilin. The Gemara on this Amud enhances the discussion of the Seuda HaMafsekes, the final meal that's eaten before Tisha B'Av that was discussed in the Mishnah on Tav Chavav HaMebeis. Tosfos' goal is to elucidate what exactly is the prohibition of Shnei Tavshilin, what is considered a Tavshil, and what is not considered a Tavshil. In order to frame Tosfos' words, and in order to see the other views that either agree or contrast with Tosfos' views, just to mention some introduction to this topic. The Gemara in Masechta Beitza speaks about Erev Tavshilin. And there we have a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to whether one Tavshil is required or two Tavshilin are required. According to the view of Beis Shammai, which is not the accepted one, but there also we have this idea of two Tavshilin, the Gemara has two leniencies. Number one, that even if the food can be eaten raw, called Nechal Chai, it's still called the Tavshil with respect to Erev Tavshilin. Number two, even if the two foods which are cooked together and even forming one entity, such as the Gemara describes the example of dog ubeitza she'olav, a piece of fish that is coated with egg, clearly becoming one entity, that's also called two tavshilin, the fish and the egg. Again, lahalacha concerning erev tavshilin, we paskin like Beis Hillel, that all you need is one tavshil. But in terms of the definition of two tavshilin, raw foods are counted, that would also be relevant for Beis Hillel's one tavshil, and even tavshilin that blend together. There's a similar discussion concerning the shnei tavshilin on Seder night, although traditionally we use a piece of meat and an egg, but at least according to one opinion in the Gemara, that's not necessary. You could also have, same example, dogu beis she'olav, it's considered two tafshilin. There the Gemara does not discuss the status of something that is edible raw, whether that's called the tafshil or not. So the Rishonim have a debate about both of those topics with respect to the prohibition of having two tafshilin on Erev Tisha B'Av. On the one hand, they debate whether or not a food that is edible raw, nechal chai, and it's cooked, does that count as a tavshil of one of the two tavshilin that we're not allowed to have on Erev Tisha B'Av, or things that are edible raw are not called a tavshil at all. So here, just to mention names, the Rosh quotes a Yesh Omrim, that Dovr Shenechal Chai is not called a tavshil, and therefore, let's say, for example, if someone, at least in our eating habits, would have a dish of cooked carrots together with, let's say, some potatoes. So the potatoes are not edible raw, but the carrots are edible raw. So that counts only as one tavshil and is therefore permissible in the Suda Mafsekes. However, the Ravid is quoted by the Rosh as saying that it doesn't matter. And the Rosh agrees with the Ravid. That since the point is not to engage in kavod and tainuk, honor and pleasure, so you can make delicious dishes even out of foods that are edible raw. And therefore, they are prohibited. So that's one machlokes rishonim. As we shall see, Tosis is going to weigh in on that debate and be makel like the Yesh Omrim that something that's edible raw is not called a tavshil. The second point of debate is to what extent do we say that tavshilin, that foods that are cooked together, are considered one tavshil or two tavshilin. Again, to recall, with respect to Erev Tavshilin and with respect to the two tavshilin of the night of the Seder, the fact that they blend together even to form one entity, the eggs are actually stuck to the fish, that's called two tavshilin. If we took that model, so concerning Erev Tavshilin and Shnei Tavshilin and the night of the Seder, there it's a kula that counts as two tavshilin. Again, in the case of Erev Tavshilin, according to the non-accepted view of Beis Shammai, and concerning Shnei Tavshilin and the night of the Seder, according to everyone, assuming you don't need meat, which is a different opinion in the Gemara in Pesachim. So that would follow that in this context, where you're not allowed to have two tavshilin, that would be a chumrah, that fish with egg on it, again, assuming you're allowed to have fish in the Suda Mafsekes, which is a further debate, but okay, let's say potatoes coated in egg or something like that. So according to that stance, that would be considered two tefshilin. This is actually the view of Rashi in his commentary on the Mishnah on Chavav and Beis, that dog ubeis she'olav is called two tefshilin and is prohibited to be eaten at the Suda Mafsekes. However, there are other views in Rishonim that are more lenient. Among them is the view of the Ramban that dog ubeis she'olav is certainly not called two tefshilin, and the Ramban goes further to say that two foods that are cooked in the same kedera, in the same pot, at the same time, so that's also called one tavshil, because they're all cooked together. The Rosh quotes an intermediate view that foods that are cooked together in the same pot that are normally cooked together, say some kind of stir fry, so that would be called only one tavshil. But if they're not normally cooked together, but you put them together somewhat artificially, so then those are called two tavshilin. So Tosis is going to weigh in on that debate as well. And as we shall prove, Tosis rejects the view of the Ramban and rejects the intermediate view of the Rosh and maintains that the default is when you cook two foods in the same pot at the same time, that's called two tavshilin, but is going to have a certain exception to the rule concerning certain unique ingredients that if they're cooked in the same pot at the same time, that those would only be called one. So we begin our presentation of the Tosis. Pirish, beis tavshilin, what is meant by the concept of two tavshilin? Tzono lomar, what that means to say is, b'shtei kederos. The simple translation of that is that are cooked in two pots. And furthermore, the simple translation of that would be that you have two different dishes that are cooked in two different pots. So for example, you have potatoes in one pot and, let's say, fish in the other. Again, not to be repetitive, there's a machlokes rishonim whether you're allowed to have fish in the Suda Mafsekes. Let's assume for now, as is the implication of Rashi and Chovav and Beis on the Mishnah, that you're allowed to, just as an example of another tavshil. So you have two tavshilin and two kederos. The simple implication of that line of Tosis, we'll see later, this is going to be somewhat problematic, that had you cooked both of them in the same pot, then it would not be a problem. We'll see later that cannot be the way to read the Tosis. Then Tosis continue. Kigon, shakorin ha'olam, achal nubeis minim, shakorin, and here we have some kind of Laz word, don't exactly know how to pronounce it, maishon, or maison, unclear whether it's French or German, but okay. So for example, that which the world calls in Laz, we ate two different kinds. So what do Tosis mean by these few lines? He starts out by saying that the definition of two tavshilin is in two pots, simply speaking, talking about two different foods, and this is what people call maishon. So if we pause there in the Tosis, it sounds like that if you mixed all the foods together into one pot, not shtei kederos, and it was cooked together, that'll be mutter. As we shall see, that simple reading is directly contradicted by the implication of what we're about to read now, and after we see the contradiction, as noted by the Achronim, will present various approaches as to how to resolve the contradiction, ultimately leading to an enhanced understanding of what these first few lines mean. To us continue. Aval ein la'asar lechol tavshil she'osin mi'betzalim u'migvina u'mibeitzim. One should not prohibit a dish that is made out of onions, cheese, and eggs. I guess something along the lines of a cheese omelet with onions. And why shouldn't that be prohibited? L'chora, you have three ingredients, and hence three tafshilin. The av agaf, since even though the ein regilin ha'olam lechol betzalim chayin, even though people don't normally eat onions raw, you right away see from Tosfos that had people been accustomed to eating onions raw, then that would be an immediate reason why not to count the onions as one of the tafshilin, because Tosfos assume, as they make explicit at the end of Tosfos, that anything that's edible raw, nechal chai, is not called a tafshil, in direct contradistinction to the halacha concerning erev tafshilin. But since people do not eat onions raw, and here Tosfos prove that, not just from the culinary customs of his day, but from a Gemara. Kida Amar be'erivin davchav tesem et aleph ochal botzel v'ishkim umeis v'chulei. That if someone eats onion, there the context is raw, and he gets up and dies, so the v'chulei is, you don't have to get the coroner to figure out why he died, because it's clear that he died from eating the raw onion. Perhaps the Gemara is speaking in somewhat hyperbole, but certainly indicating that it is not the norm to eat raw onions, and at least there's a risk factor in so doing. We'll come back to that perhaps at the end of Tosfos to point out that the proof in the Gemara in Erevin seems to be somewhat problematic, but that is the literal reading of that Gemara, at least just that one line, that if you eat onions raw, it's a risk factor to your health, and therefore wouldn't normally be eaten raw. Then Tosfos continue, Shekoshin l'chol gufo shel adam kacharavos. Since eating those raw onions is difficult for the body of man like swords. So in the Eyes of Hutter, they point out that this particular line is not in the Gemara in Erevin, which Tosfos referenced, but that's the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samach Beis and Aleph. There the Gemara is commenting on a pasuk in the Tochacha, Cherev to'uklu, that you will be consumed by the sword. So some of the Mefarshim note, perhaps because it uses a verb that is also used in terms of eating, that not only literally will the sword, Chalila, consume the Jewish people in times of Golos and tragedy, but also the only foods that you'll have to eat will be things that will cause havoc in your body and will feel like swords. And one of those foods is a raw onion. So Tosfos is seamlessly combining two Gemaras together as if they were one Gemara, demonstrating that eating raw onions is unhealthy, painful, and therefore not the norm. So all of this was an introduction to why onions should theoretically be problematic in this onion, egg, cheese dish. Because the eggs are certainly a tafshil. They're not edible raw. The onions, at first glance, if they would be edible raw, maybe shouldn't be called a tafshil. But Tosfos proved from the Gemara that they are not edible raw, and as such, they should be a tafshil. But Tosfos say, nonetheless, we could dismiss the onions as a problematic ingredient in this concoction because of the following svara, which he now states. Afal pikein, nevertheless, since we don't make a dish out of onions alone, im lo yasimu o shuman o shum davar, if they don't place together with the onions in the pot either some fat or some other ingredient, shenosein bohem tam, that gives flavor to the onions, the Bach slightly changes the girsa to lo yasimu bo shuman o shum davar without the double o. Okay, same basic idea. So because of all that, since you don't eat onions even cooked without some other ingredient to give flavor to the onions, ain't no curry tavshil. So therefore the onions are not called an independent tavshil, a cooked dish. Kidei lesar beitzim, in order to prohibit the beitzim, shemesimen imohem, that are placed in the same pot with them. In other words, the egg is certainly a tavshil. The onion should also be a tavshil since it's not edible raw, but the fact that the onions are never eaten alone when they're cooked, only together with some other ingredient that enhances their flavor, so therefore it's not called a tavshil.
Tosas seem to be presenting a svara that a tafshil is only called something that is edible independently. But if you need something else to be eaten with it, so that can't be called a tafshil. In this case, the beitzim are serving to enhance to some extent the onions, even though primarily the onions are enhancing the egg. But since you would never dream eating onions alone, only with something else, so you cannot consider the onions as an independent tafshil, and therefore all that is considered here is some kind of enhancer to the egg, and therefore you have here one tafshil. Just as a bit of analysis on this line, it would have been easy for me to understand if Tosis had said, not that you don't eat onions alone unless you put some enhancer to make the onions taste better, like shuman, which is not such a significant independent ingredient by itself. But if Tosis had said, you never eat onions alone cooked, you always use them to enhance some other food, then that would be, to my humble mind, a smoother svara to explain why onions are not called a tafshil, because they're always an enhancer. But the svara that Tosas give, that you do eat onions as a separate dish, but only if it's enhanced and flavored by some shuman or some other flavoring agent. So why that svara declares the onions to not be an independent tafshil requires some more analysis, that an independent tafshil is only something that is eaten by itself and doesn't need something else. It's not a dependent tafshil. It's an independent tafshil in order to be palatable. Okay, but be that as it may, so we've knocked out onions as one of the ingredients in this, we'll call it a cheese omelet, and therefore that does not pose a problem of shnei tafshilin. What remains to be seen, which Tosas already alluded to earlier, is why the cheese is not a problem. Avol min hagvina, Tosas continue, hamavushal b'kdeira, which is cooked in the pot, ein chashash lechol, that is totally not a problem to eat. Why? Dechol davar shu nechal kamo shu chai, since anything that is edible raw, as we've said before, that is Tosas' opinion, kamo cholav, kamo gvina, like milk, like cheese, kamo tapuchim, like apples, ein behem toiras bishel klal uklal. It has no status of being a cooked food. The cooking act does not really nitpas in them. It does not take root in them at all. Again, Tosas is rather sweeping statement of klal uklal. So first of all, is probably alluding to the famous leniency concerning bishel akum, that anything that's edible raw is mutar, and you can really give two reasons for that. One is that you don't have a karas atoiv, you don't have any sense of gratitude to the non-Jew for cooking it for you, and therefore you're not going to sort of get too close to him, and therefore it won't lead to intermarriage. But Tosis's framework that it's not called bishel sounds like it's a halachic idea, that it's only bishel akum that Chazal prohibited. They didn't prohibit other forms of food preparation. It's not called bishel if it's edible raw, because bishel is defined as making something edible. If you didn't need the bishel to make it edible, so then there's no bishel. And similarly, in our context, you can't call it a tavshil, halachically. This perhaps could also have ramifications in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, because the post can debate whether cooking an apple, which is of course edible raw, on Shabbos, which the Mordechai explicitly says is prohibited, but is that a prohibition in a Torah, which is the view of the Mishnah Berurah, or is that a prohibition in the Rabbanan, which is the view of the Radvaz? The Radvaz's formulation is because it's not called bishul, halachically. And that idea that comes up in terms of bishul akum reflects on a fundamental Torah principle. Tosis's formulation of ein bem Torah's bishul klal uklal perhaps seems to indicate the svar of the Radvaz, that it's never called bishul. Okay, perhaps Tosis is distinguishing between the din derabanan of the Shnei Tafshilin of Tisha B'Av and the din derabanan of bishul akum and the din deraisa of Shabbos. So, just in wrapping up this Tosis, before we get to the first few lines, it is directly evident from the Tosis that the only reason he was mad at the cheese omelet, because he went through ingredient by ingredient and indicated that two out of the three ingredients are not problematic. The cheese, directly speaking, because it's edible raw, and the onion, through a fancier analysis, because it's not called a tavshil, because it's never eaten independently without some other enhancer. So the Achronim are all medayik from this Tosis. That Tosis clearly reject the leniency of the Ramban, that any foods that are cooked in the same pot are always called one tafshil with respect to this halacha, and that they also reject the Rush's intermediate suggestion that any foods that are normally cooked together are called one tafshil. Because the case of this cheese omelet is clearly something that is normal to cook together. And nonetheless, Tosis needed fancy svaris
one by one, to eliminate two out of the three ingredients as being problematic. But had he not had those svaras, had they been at least two ingredients that were neither edible raw, and each of them independently could be cooked in a separate pot without any kind of enhancer, and would be eaten separately, it sounds directly from Tosis that even if it's normal to cook them together, that would be a problem of Shnei Tavshilin. That's what all the Achronim note. In light of that, Tosis's first few lines, even though they're certainly correct lahalacha, but the diuk that emerges from those lines seem to be incorrect according to Tosis's view. Tosis write, Pirish Beis Tavshilin, Rotzalamar B'shtei Kederos, that if you have two pots, simply speaking, with two foods, and then it gives the French word. So that's usser. So by saying that two foods in two pots is usser, the direct implication is that if you had the two different kinds of foods that are cooked in one pot, that will be mutter. Either if it's normal to cook them together, or maybe even if it's abnormal to cook them together. But that implication directly contradicts what we would just medayek from the latter part of Tosis. So how do we read that opening line? This question is first raised by the Maharsho. He says that Tosis's words are somewhat megumgamim, somewhat hard to understand. He starts out with an implication that you need to have two pots to be two tefshilin, but clearly later on implies that even in one pot, if you have two solid ingredients that don't have any other leniencies, that also will be awesome. So two approaches that are given are as follows. One is to put in the word O, and that is as follows. Pirish, Beis Tavshilin, Ratzalama B'shtei Kederos. One example of the prohibition of two cooked dishes is where you cook it in two separate pots. Now we have O. Another example of Shnei Tavshilin is Kigon Shekorin Ha'olam Achalnu Beis Minim Shekorin Maishon. And that would mean that even if it's in one pot, but people would say, colloquially, that even though it's in one pot, we had two different kinds, even though they were all mixed together in one pot. So that's also called Shnei Tavshilin. According to that reading, so we could easily translate the word, Maishon, like the Yiddish word coming from the German, Mission, meaning mixed together. I spoke to a Taisa scholar, Dr. Kanefogel from Yeshiva University, and he said, based on his quick research and on Old French, so there are French words also that also imply that kind of meaning where you have separate ingredients
which merge to become one culinary dish.
If that's true, that it means separate ingredients that become one whole entity together, doesn't that directly contradict the first line of Tosis of B'shtei Kederos? So if we throw in the word O, pointed out in the back of the Oso Hadar from a Beis Aleph Heimem, that's a Be'er HaMelech or something like that. So then it would flow nicely.
Namely, that first Tosis discussed the basic case of two separate foods cooked in two pots. And then they add the greater Chiddush that even two separate foods that are cooked in the same pot that they referred to as two minim are also prohibited. It's interesting that according to that, it should follow that Tosfos, unlike Rashi, would hold that if it mamish merges into one food, like fish with egg on top, so in that kind of case, no one's going to say we had two minim, that at least that would be considered one tavshil with respect to the laws of Surah Mafsekes, unlike the halacha concerning Eruv Tavshilin, according to Beis Shammai, and the Shnei Tavshilin on the night of the Seder.
And then after that, Tosis then proceed to say that even though I just said that two foods that are mixed together are problematic, but it's not always problematic if some of the ingredients could be eliminated halachically in the sense of the fact that they're edible raw, or that they're never eaten independently without some kind of enhancer. In the name of a commentary called Ginzei Yosef, again, the Oz Vahadar in the footnotes on the Marsha, they give a different understanding of the Tosis, but I think that leads to a problematic reading of the word Mashon as to what it means. Okay, so that would mean as follows. There's a third Machloikas Rishonim that we didn't mention in our introduction as to what happens if you have the same food, but it's prepared with a different flavor in two different pots. So for example, let's say you have pasta, and in one pot you prepare it with oil, and in another pot you prepare it with some kind of other spice that gives it a different kind of flavor. So Rav Haigon says that two pots need to be two different foods, but they quote from the Rav Yitzchak Geus, the Ritz Geus, that's also called two dishes. So the Ginzei Yosef suggests that that's what Tosis are
driving at.
Chiddush number one, Pirish Beis Tavshilin, Ratzalama B'shtei Kederos. That the very existence in two pots, even if it's the same food, but the fact that you're preparing it with a different preparation, that's what the Achronim note, that it's very difficult to say that even the Ritz Geus is going to say that if you have two noodle dishes that are just in two pots, but they taste exactly the same, that's going to be called Shnei Tavshilin, just because you didn't have enough space in one one pot and you cook it in another pot. So it would mean the same food, but in a somewhat different preparation, a different flavor. So the Ginza Yosef suggests that that's what Tosfos are driving at. That again, Chiddush number one, based of Shilin Ratzalama B'Shtei Kederos, that the fact that it's in different pots with different flavors, even though it's the same food, so that is called Shnei Tavshilin. Then Tosfos point out that by implication of the continuing lines of Tosfos from the Aval, that even if they're put into the same pot, but they're different foods, so that, of course, is going to be called Shnei Tavshilin, because they're two different foods. But there'll be exceptions if some of the ingredients can be discounted. According to that reading, so the Kegon, Shekorin, Olam, Achalnu, Beis, Minim, Shekorin, Maishon, so the word Maishon might have to mean something like variety. That even if you had pasta and pasta, but since they have different flavors, so people say we ate beis minim as a result of the fact that there was variety. Okay, so you have to check the words and to see if there's any type over here to see whether that word could really mean something along the lines of variety as opposed to perhaps what would have been the simple meaning along the lines of the word mission, which would mean that we're dealing with where it's actually mixed together. Halacha lemaisa, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to accept either of these aspects of Tosfos. Tosfos has a chumrah that when everything is cooked together, if at least two of the ingredients are problematic, so then you're not allowed to have that for the Surah Mafsekes. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that any two ingredients that are normally cooked in the same dish is called one tafshil. And the kula of Tosfos that anything that's edible raw is not a problem of a tafshil on the Surah Mafsekes, so that the Shulchan Aruch paskins the chumrah. Minig Yisrael, as already noted by the Ramah and other poskim, is to have a very meager tavshil, customary to have hard-boiled eggs or beans, and not really rely on any of these leniencies. Just one additional comment on that which Tosfos quotes to Gemara in Erevin, that people don't normally eat raw onions, where he quotes the Gemara that says that if someone eats a raw onion and dies, chalila, that you don't have to suspect that something else happened to him other than the fact that it was the effects of the onion. So Tosfos presumably is talking about a dish where you had eggs and the chopped up white part of the onion, the main part of the onion, as well as cheese. The Gemara over there points out that the danger in eating the onion is only the leaves, the green part, but not what the Gemara refers to as the aim, the bulb of the onion or the white part. And even the green leaves, it's only if it's not a certain size. Once it grows at a certain size, it removes whatever poisonous substance it has inside of it. So somewhat sarachian that Tosfos brought a raya from that Gemara that onions are unhealthy or even dangerous raw when the Gemara only attaches that to the green part. Perhaps the other proof he brings, which the Also, Hadar, as we noted, pointed out as from Masechta Shabbos, not from Erevin, Cherev Toklu, that eating onions is like swords. There, the Gemara does not qualify that it's only talking about the green. So, somewhat Sarachi and Antosis is Raya from Erevin.
The Mishnah quoted the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who argues on the Tanakhama that lo yochal adam shnei tavshilin. And Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says the requirement is yishana. You have to change something about your eating practices, but you don't necessarily have to prohibit eating two tavshilin. So in a braisa, on our Amud, so Rabbi Yehuda explains the shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Ketzad Mishana, and because this will be relevant also to the next Tosfos, we'll elaborate a bit on what Rabbi Yehuda says. So he gives several examples of how you have to be Mishana. Example number one is the type of foods that you're eating. If you normally eat Shnei Tavshilin, so Yochal Min Echad, you only eat one Tavshil. The Rashash points out that the Girsa that we have seems to be somewhat problematic, because then it turns out that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees that you're not allowed to have two Tavshilin. But it sounds like he's disagreeing and he's being more lenient. So maybe the Rishonim seem to have a slightly different Girsa, that it's not Rogel Echol Shnei Tavshilin Yochal Min Echad, it's Rogel Echol Gimel Tavshilin Yochal Shnei Tavshilin. In other words, you're allowed to have two, you just have to have less than you normally have. So if you normally have three, you could have two. If you normally have four, you could have three. If you normally have two, so then you have to go down to one. But it's not that Shnei Tavshilin are prohibited per se, only that you have to lessen the amount that you have. Rashash himself wants to change the girsa based on a certain reading of Rashi, that it's Yochal Min Acher, that you could have two Tavshilin, but you should eat some kind of other two Tavshilin. Okay, but either way, that's in terms of what you are eating. Then we have who you're eating with.
that if you normally eat with 10 people, so you only eat with 5. Is that the dafka, that you have to have it, or maybe even 9 is good enough? Unclear. And then the third rule is in terms of the quantity that you're eating. So if you normally have 10 cups, Farshim point out, sounds like even wine. Here we have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, as elucidated by Rabbi Yehuda, arguing on the prohibition against drinking wine. It holds it's mutar, but just if you drink less, so you only have 10 cups, you should have 5 cups. Okay? So in terms of what we eat, who we eat with, and how much quantity you're having. So Tosa's comment on the second instantiation of Yishana, v'mhayaroga lisod basara yisod b'chamisha, tzorech lemait b'chvodo. What is the purpose of lessening the amount of people you eat with from 10 to 5? Because it's required to lessen the amount of glory you have. As the Rosh said earlier, in terms of the fact that we have to prohibit, in his view, like the Ravid, of even foods that are eaten raw, because the purpose of all of these rules is to lessen kavod and tainug, glory and pleasure. In explaining that way, Tosfos is similar to Rashi, who also says, Dibi Masal Basara, Shoyusoadin Imo Lechvodo, who would dine with him to honor him. It sounds like an immediate ramification of that, according to this view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, as elucidated by Rabbi Yehuda, is that if the people assembled are not there to honor the host, so then it would be mutar to have many people. And one immediate ramification of that would be that a family of 10 would not necessarily have to split up into different groups of 5 and 5 for the Sudam of Sekis, even according to the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And similarly, if people are being invited over just because they have no other place to eat the Sudam of Sekis, so they're not really gathering lichvodo, so maybe there also there wouldn't be a need to lessen. What remains unclear from this Tosis is, do we paskin like this? After all, it's the view of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel,
which we reject concerning his permit to drink wine and to have 2 tafshilin.
So, halacha lemaisa, that question seems somewhat academic, because the Rishonim debate whether it's appropriate to have a zimun for the Sudam of Sekis. Some say it's okay, and some say that even if you eat together, you don't have a zimun. So, halacha lemaisa, we generally advise that people should eat separately anyway to avoid that shaila, and therefore, by default, we're certainly following this and going down from whatever number it is to 1. As we shall see in the next Tosis, it's quite possible, even without that question of zimun, that we actually would accept this particular aspect of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's view, even though it's not stated by the Tanakam. So let us begin the next Tosis. Dibe maschil, v'alvagaf de ka'amar ha'shas, de basam aliach muter, kol zman she'eno kishlamim. Tosis dibe maschil is not a direct quote from the Gemara. He's adding on some words of enhancement and basically summarizing the Gemara. The Gemara, toward the end of the Amud, discusses elucidating the view of the Tanakama, that you're not allowed to have meat during the Sudam of Sekis, you're not allowed to have wine, but not all wine and meat are created equal. Wine is permissible if it's basically grape juice. It didn't have 3 days pass over it yet. And meat, it's only prohibited if it's similar to a carbon shlamim. Carbon shlamim, as Rashi points out, is eaten for 2 days and a night. So if it's salted, and it's older than that, and it has waited for more than that time period of 2 days and a night, namely 3 days, then that basar maliach, that salty meat, is no longer called meat. So Tosis is commenting, first and elucidating, what is the definition of basar maliach? That's the first part of Tosis. And then secondly, pointing out that even though the Gemara allows basar maliach, but we don't. And thirdly, summarizing some additional halachis, based on our Gemara, of what we're allowed to eat during the Sudam of Sekis as well. So we begin. Even though the Gemara tells us the basar maliach muter kol zman she'eino kishlamim, that the salty meat is mutter as long as it's no longer like the shlamim. Kilomar meaning, this is also stated by Rashi, she'avar yoser mibeis yamim mishchitosoi, that 2 days have passed from the time it was slaughtered, because that's the time that you're allowed to eat the carbon shlamim. So here, before I should note, that there's a slight machlokes between Tosfos and Rashi. Tosfos is starting the clock from the time of the shechita. The fact that it's called basar maliach sounds like it's salted too.
Seemingly, this is not talking about salting it to get out of the blood for kashrus reasons, but rather for preservation, because it's talking about that it's sitting in its salt for several days. But in any case,
the clock begins at the time of the shechita. That's in direct contrast to Rashi, where Rashi says, "And dibe maschil ad kama shalosha b'molcho al shnei yamim v'layla echad kizman achil shalom." That it only stayed with its salt for 2 days with a night in between. Once it passes that, on the third day, it's no longer called basar maliach. So it's clear from the Rashi that the clock begins in the time they put the salt on, not in the time of the shechita. somewhat of a difference in Rashi and Tosis. But Tosis continued to say the second part, Afilo achi, nevertheless, l'didan oser lechol basar afilo maluach mizman meruba, that we are not allowed to eat meat, even if it's salted for a long time. That particular line sounds like the clock begins from the time that the salt is applied. Okay, Tzas Sarchin and the Tosis had to resolve that slight contradiction. Nevertheless, even the Gemara allowed basa maliach, but we are not allowed to eat the salty meat, even if it was salted a long time ago. Again, that line independently sounds a little more like Rashi, that the clock begins in the time of the salting. And why is that a wemo machmir? So you could have said it's time of stringency, like we had the simple pshat of the Rashi earlier, who prohibited laundering the linen clothing during the Shavuot Shechalbo. But here Tosis gives a specific reason. Since we are accustomed to eat salty meat. Now, presumably what he means by that is not salting for kashrus reasons, because then everyone's accustomed to eat salty meat. Unless you say roasted meat to get the blood out. It means preserved meat that you're putting in salt to preserve it.
As we inferred earlier from the fact that it's talking about staying in the salt for 2 or 3 days.
So since we're used to eating that, they didn't have refrigeration, so they're very used to eating that, so that's considered a pleasurable experience, because that's their normal meat. So since that's their normal meat, it's going to be prohibited. And indeed, this psak is quoted by the Tor in the name of the smak, like this Tosis, and that's the halach lemaisa, that we don't have the practice to eat basa maliach in the Suda Mafsekis. One could have said that the reason for the stringency doesn't apply anymore because now we have refrigeration, so we're not so accustomed to eat beef jerky or salty meat that's for preservation. But nonetheless, that's the custom. No one would dream of eating meat in the Suda Mafsekis, even if it's very salty for many, many days. Similarly, and this is something Tosis do not discuss, we also prohibit customarily even grape juice. But that seems to be just an added on stringency. Not necessarily because of Tosis' svara that we are accustomed to drinking grape juice. Although there, that also is pretty true. Okay, so that's the end of the second part. Now we have the third part. Additional halachas concerning the Suda Mafsekis. V'chein tzarech lemait b'shiyoso, a person has to lessen the amount that they drink during the Suda Mafsekis. Shem hoya roga lishtos asara kosos mishechor o mimashke acher. If a person is accustomed to drink 10 cups of med, some kind of other alcoholic beverage other than wine, o mimashke acher, or some kind of other drink, lo yishte kim chamisha, you should only drink 5. Where do Tosfos get that psak from? So of course this is taken straight out of the Braisa, where we have Rabbi Huda elaborating on the words of Shimon ben Gamliel. What does it mean, Yishana? As we said earlier, we're changing what you eat, whom you eat with, and how much you eat. So we're going down from 10 to 5. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel himself, who holds the allowed to drink wine, so he, through the elucidation of Rabbi Yehuda, does not distinguish between 10 cups of wine going down to 5 cups of wine or 10 cups of beer going down to 5 cups of beer. Because he allows wine. So you just have to have less wine. But Tosfos, sensitive to the fact that we possibly like the Tana Kama that you're not allowed to have meat or wine, but against Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who's allowing wine, maybe even allowing meat if you have less dishes. So Tosfos, therefore, updates Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's stringency to beverages other than wine. And that's why he says Shechar, or Mashke Acher. Perhaps the chumra is only limited to Mashkim Chashuvim, that may be alcoholic, but maybe there's no restriction in how much apple juice you have. So there's somewhat of a difficulty in this Tosis, because don't we pass like the Tana Kama, who doesn't mention this idea of Yishana, which includes lessening the amount of cups you have? So the Beis Yosef explains what the Tosis is driving at, and indeed, this is recorded l'aloch on the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel includes within his words of Yishana, kulis and chumris. There's a kula, that unlike the Tana Kama, who totally bans meat. And he totally bans wine. And he totally bans Shnei Tavshilin. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you theoretically could allow meat, you could allow wine, you could allow Shnei Tavshilin, provided it's less than you normally have. So instead of 3 Tavshilin, 2 Tavshilin, instead of 10 cups of wine, 5 cups of wine. So in that regard, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel presents to us a leniency. But he also has a stringency. And that stringency is, number one, even if it's not wine, you have to lessen the amount you drink. And number two, as we saw earlier in the previous Tosis, that you have to lessen the amount of people that you eat with. So that's what the Beis Yosef explains, that Tosis assume that the stringencies that are included by the psak of Yishana, that you have to differentiate the Suda Mafsekis from all other meals during the year, so those we do accept. It's only the leniency of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you don't accept, that it's sufficient to lessen the amount that you consume and you could have wine, and perhaps you could have meat, and you could have shnei tafshilin. That we reject. But the stringency, that you have to lessen the amount from 10 to 5, or something like that, and the amount of people you eat with, so that we do accept. And indeed, as we mentioned, one way or the other, these are recorded in Shulchan Aruch. Concerning the cups of other beverages, that you have to lessen them, at least alcoholic ones, that is accepted. And the idea of lessening the amount of people you eat with, so that's accepted by Kal V'chaimer, because we advise to separate in order to avoid the issue of Zimun. But included within that is also the idea that you have to eat with less people. Now Tosfos add on some additional halachis or minhagim. Tzarech l'shanos mekomo shehu ragel le'echol bo. You have to change the normal place you eat in. Kemo shehoya minhago sherabbi Yehuda rabbi Loi sheyoshav ochal erev Tisha B'Av bein tana likirayim mokem shehoya minuvo. Just like the practice which the Gemara records at the very end of the Amud, that Rabbi Yehuda rabbi Loi, that's the famous Rabbi Yehuda, the student of Rabbi Akiva, that he would sit and eat on erev Tisha B'Av between the two different kinds of ovens, the oven and the stove, bein tana likirayim, in the place that was very unseemly, minuvo, as a sign of mourning, or as the post can point out, the even higher level of aninus. It's like a Misha Mesa Mutlufanov, an Erev Tisha B'Av has some echoes of the fact it's as if it's before the burial. So at first glance, this Tosfos is also somewhat difficult, because that was the meaning of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi. So that sounds like it was a Midas Chasidus, it was an act of piety, and not necessarily binding halacha. So perhaps the Tosfos understood again that there are two layers over here. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi's specific custom to eat bein tana likirayim, that was his practice. But that which that practice implies, the greater idea that the fact you shouldn't eat in your regular place, maybe Tosfos viewed that as actual halacha. Or perhaps Tosfos maintained that it is proper that everyone should take on this custom of Yehuda Rabbi Loi to some extent, not necessarily to the extreme of eating bein tana likirayim, but at least changing the normal place of eating. Indeed, this is also recorded in Shulchan Aruch that the common custom is to eat the Seudah HaMafsekes, even though Tisha B'Av has not entered yet, on the floor, which certainly would be a shinui of the normal place that we eat at, and even more so.